The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. How can cover crops increase yields, control weeds, and provide added feed for your livestock? Austin Schweitzer farms in south central Kansas, and his experimentation with regenerative farming methods, such as cover crop mixes, is already paying dividends on his farm. I stopped by to see what's working well. That's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. 2019 performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, just text PROVEN to 31313. Cover crops are certainly not a new topic for many. In fact, some of us have probably tried them with varying degrees of success. This edition of our show goes beyond just cover crops, though. Austin Schweitzer is a young farmer who likes to see how small changes in his farming methods can make big differences in things like crop yields, soil health, nutrient management, and weed control. He's also finding ways to incorporate his cow herd into his farming systems. I was recently near Nickerson, Kansas, and we went out to one of his fields where he was finishing up harvest. I began by asking Austin to simply describe his farm.
Yeah, we're all dry land. The family farm, my dad and his brothers farm together. We do wheat, milo, corn, soybeans, do some alfalfa, and we grow some sorghum silage.
You've obviously been farming for a while. Are there some things, though, that you've been doing differently here in the last few years as you think about regenerative agriculture?
Yeah. In the last 5 or 6 years, we've done more no-till than we did before. And then we've moved into doing some cover crops, regenerative ag, working on cover crop blends behind wheat and other things, trying to save resources and, increase our soil health.
Maybe something I should ask is to you, this term regenerative agriculture, what does it mean to you? Because that term gets used sometimes. What does it mean to you?
Regenerative ag is a hard one because there's been a lot of buzzwords. You know, there was no-till, then cover crops, and then, regenerative. Regenerative to me is by farming that acre, my practices, I am increasing the soil health on that acre, and we are not going backwards. So whether that's, I look at no-till as a tool. I look at cover crops as a tool. Tillage is a tool if I need it, but I don't like to use herbicide's a tool. So I try to use all the tools together, and we're still increasing soil health. And cover crops have added a lot to that. No-till has been a huge in that. So we're trying to, save resources and be more efficient with that acre.
You mentioned the cover crops, and I know that's a big thing that you do here. You have wheat. Is that normally when the cover crops are coming after the wheat? But you probably do it on a lot of other acres too.
Yeah, one of the easiest ways to get the cover crops on around here is following wheat harvest, from 1st of July, and if you want to do a rye blend, into August, September, where we're growing cover crops then behind wheat. You can grow behind corn, or you can go behind beans. There's other ways to do it, but behind wheat is an easy one, and easiest way to get a good cover crop going.
What are you using for cover crops then?
Behind wheat, if we're gonna do like a biomass blend that we're gonna, graze, we'll do Sudan millet, mung beans, cowpeas, turnips, radishes, sunflowers in there, some African cabbage, some kale, pretty diverse blend. And then, if we're gonna go like the rye blends, a lot of it, mostly rye, some vetch, a little bit of turnips, maybe some rapeseed.
How do you go about selecting what you want to do for cover crops? Or has it been, we're going to try different things and just see what works?
Well, early on when I was trying, there was a lot of, hunting and guessing. Go to a lot of soil health meetings, listen to a lot of podcasts, do some reading. Really what I look at is what are we doing? What's our goal here? Are we trying to fix the problem with our soil? Do we need cow feed? What crop are we going to go to next? There's a lot of questions there that I like to look at, and then we'll build a blend accordingly.
with your cover crops, especially those after wheat, big deal's grazing them, right, here on your farm?
Yeah, that's the hope. You know, it, sometimes it doesn't work out that way depending on the weather, but yeah, you know, the one field that my test field with General Mills, you know, that field was to be grazed, but you know, we kind of got dry and it kind of burned up. So the plans changed, but yeah, the grazing is one of the things we look for.
Talk about how you do the grazing, because are you grazing full fields at once? Or are you just moving and kind of doing some rotational grazing type of thing?
Well, like grazing like these milo stalks here, you know, we'll probably just put the cows on it and graze it as a field. But been working with some, you know, like Gallagher turbo wire fence rolls, and the cover crops, we've been moving the cows every day, every other day, every 5 days. And that's worked really good, even manure distribution, you know, even residue, that's worked really well, hoping to keep doing that. That's for cover crop, or for our cover crop fields, I think that's the best way to go. Cows get a more even diet.
Well, are you seeing the difference in the cows just as far as nutrition on them?
You know, last winter, it looked really good. We're excited, so we're gonna keep going with that and see, you know, the cows looked good and they seemed to do good on it, and you know, I love the residue they left in the field, and it was a win-win. The cows were excited to move, and everything just worked well.
What are you seeing as far as the cover crops and your soil health then? Because you've already seen some things in a lot
of
fields.
So like on sandy ground, I don't know why we would farm a piece of sandy ground and not try to do covers in that rotation. The sandy soils, they're fragile. The drought can be very prevalent there. We need to save moisture. The cover cools the soil top down when we get hot in the summer. You know, our microbes are getting fed. We're keeping our microbes moving. The sandy soils, it works really well, and we're getting a yield bump. You know, for me, soybeans behind a cover, you know, you can figure a 5 to 10 bushel yield bump pretty regularly.
Yeah.
So
why don't you think more people are doing the cover crops? Because you've had such good results with it. So what keeps people from doing it?
Well, it's a new idea. And out here, you know, we're in the 26 to 28 inch rainfall. So there is a problem that you can use up your moisture, and your moisture for another crop is difficult. But if the more you learn about soil health and you understand how they work, you can gain moisture because your infiltration rate. So it's give and take. And I'm not saying that growing a cover crop is easy all the time. But, you know, planting in the spring, like with soybeans, for say behind rye, I watch the videos of everybody back east that can roll the cover crop and plant green. And I would like to, but I have to watch my weather. If we're getting drier in a drier cycle, I will kill that rye early and save moisture. So that moisture is a big thing. There's not a lot of knowledge about some of it. And I think it's growing, and I think we're moving in the right direction, but you know, there's, it's a new idea, and it's difficult. It's, you know, you look at that, running your planter through that much residue, that, you know, that can be a challenge too. And, you know, herbicide residuals is a challenge with cover crops. You've got to watch that. And there's a lot of things to look at, yeah. But there's a lot of positives as well.
But you will graze this, so you'll still run your planter through it, but they'll graze it down quite a bit, right?
Yeah, we'll graze it down to 40%, probably, something like that. And then most of it, the hoof traffic, you know, it'll be down to 6 inches tall, 8 inches tall. We'll still catch some snow, but it'll be a nice mulch is what we like to look for.
We talked about it a little bit over there, but why don't you talk about what have you seen soil health-wise then? Are you seeing more nutrients? You're seeing a yield bump. You're seeing a lot of things that make you believe, hey, I want to keep doing this.
Yeah, and that's, you know, with soil testing, the nutrition is becoming available. And, you know, I'm not saying that by growing a cover crop, you don't have to put any fertilizer on your next crop. But I think growing a cover crop, you need to be paying attention. If you pull a soil test, as the covers break down, each plant mineralizes nutrients differently. So then we're getting potassium, we're getting some phosphorus, you know, the manganese, boron, different things are becoming available to where it's not as required on a test. And, you know, on my farm personally, the test fields I've been doing, you know, I'm backing off on phosphorus 25%. You know, I'm backing off potassium almost completely. And because it shows I have it there available. And my cover crop helped me bring it available. So, you know, as my soil gets more healthy, my microbes are working, my infiltration rates are better, my soil system is cycling nutrients. And as we cycle those nutrients, it is then available to feed my crop. So it's all in this system approach. And as we get the system, it's, you know, it takes years to do, but as the system starts to function better, we don't, you know, you don't need to give it as much supplement.
Yeah. You're in a watershed here. Does that put you on with extra pressure then as far as any nutrient runoff, or what are you seeing because of
we are just in the edge of the Cheney watershed. So I'm the test field technically isn't even in the edge of it, but it's not as restrictive, but they're doing a lot. Howard and Lisa do a great job with the Cheney watershed with information and meetings and teaching, but it's not, to my knowledge, it's not restrictive yet.
Yeah.
So
the General Mills program, a lot of people may not have heard about that. So what is it and how did you get involved with it?
The General Mills program is a test program for this area in the Cheney watershed. Basically, they signed up different farmers with a test field, and they've pulled a lot of samples on those fields. And we're gonna measure in a 3-year progress on what kind of soil properties we change by being regenerative. So, you know, that it's basically a program where we're gonna learn, we're gonna see, we're gonna put numbers to what we're doing here and see if we can make a change and what kind of change we can do. You know, infiltration rates, soil organic carbon, soil density. I mean, all the different tests we're gonna check and see what we do. And with that program, then we get to work with the Understanding Ag Company, and David Kleinschmidt is the agronomist I get to work with, and we talk about cover crops, we talk about crop rotation, we talk about, you know, soil health, what we're doing, what we need to be doing, and it's a lot of fun. Bounce ideas off him, and we kind of, as a group, we're learning, and we're learning together, basically.
Standing here in the field, we're a long ways from the grocery store, but do you think we're continuing to have to think more about this because the people in the grocery store are wanting to know more about what you're doing out here on the farm? Is that part of the program?
I think that's probably part of it. We're trying to, you know, see if there's a more sustainable way to grow a crop, and by doing that, you know, we will be able to show that agriculture is efficient and we're making a safe, sustainable product. So I think that is part of it too.
You believe, and you've already kind of mentioned this, but the return on investment is there for you?
Yeah, I'm seeing it. The soil health has been excellent, and you know, with the crop prices moving up and down, and you know, rain is sometimes we don't get the rains we need, and you know, it's still a struggle at times. But I'm using less inputs, so by growing covers in different time frames, I'm using less herbicide as burn down. I'm using, like this year, I only had to do one pass in bean crop, and like I said, no fertilizer over the beans, so there is savings there. And you know, there's a cost with the cover crop. It is expensive to plant sometimes, and you have your planting cost, but herbicide's expensive too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So good. By saving a few herbicide passes, it pays pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
There's time saving, but you have to look at it differently. So you know, we didn't till 3 times and then plant in the spring. So yeah, we had to run a sprayer over and terminate and drill, but you know, we saved time there. And you know, there's time savings with the wheat stubble. You know, if you're going to do tillage on wheat stubble, you're going to do what, 4 or 5 passes through the summer. Well, if you grow a cover crop to rotate, you know, you planted your cover crop and let it go. So, you know, there's time savings at places. Grazing, you know, that changes it a little bit because you have to take care of the cows and you have to move them and stuff. But, you know, it takes time to get up every morning and feed a bale too. So it's kind of what you want to trade off with. But cows are pretty sustainable. If you move them, they'll take care of themselves.
Sure. We did most of our interview in one of Austin's Milo fields that he was harvesting in early November. We decided to go over to one of his fields of cover crops as well that he had planted after wheat this summer. So we switched locations and discussed how his cover crop mix is benefiting his farm.
Talk about this field. What are we seeing here? Because this is even a bigger mix of cover crops.
Yeah, this is an 11-way, I believe. I don't remember all of them, but turnips, radishes, rapeseed, kale, sunflowers, sun hemp, millet, sedan. I don't remember everything, but there was quite a blend. It was behind wheat. It was done a little bit later than everything else we had, and we got dry. So as you can see, there's not a lot of growth, but we've got a good variety. It's kind of a test. We're gonna see, you know, in the spring, we're gonna check it probably 3 weeks, 4 weeks before planting, we're going to go to grain sorghum, and we're going to test and see what kind of nutrients we have stocked up, and we're going to dial up our, you know, our nutrition plan for that grain sorghum off of what the cover crop made available. So we're going to see what we do there. It's going to be interesting. So,
from what you've seen for the cover crop so far, do you think that you gain by having a bigger mix? Is that what you're trying to figure out? Are you trying to figure out what would be the perfect mix for a cover crop in this area?
Yeah, yes and no. Depending on what you're, if you're going to graze it, you know, you need to go with more grasses. You need to grow biomass. If you're like, we weren't sure if we were going to graze this when we planted it. So this is more of a, you know, more diversity. We're hoping with some of the plants out here, we're hoping to unlock nutrients that we need and cycle nutrition. You want to get your carbon to nitrogen ratio balanced to where you don't have too much dry matter out here that can't break down. You want to feed the soil microbes. They like the carbon to nitrogen ratio to be balanced. So this one's a little higher or a little lower carbon to nitrogen than what we were looking at before, but we are figuring on the cows to process the one from before. So this one, I'm hoping the soil will process.
Microbial activity, what have you seen so far?
You know, microbial activity is hard to define, but digging around in the soils, it seems like we're respiring better, where the air exchange is better. As our infiltration rates increase, you know, when we dig plants, we've got a lot of dirt sticking to the roots. We've got good interaction between the plant and the soil. You know, it's kind of a moving target depending on your moisture in your soil, you know, your time of year and everything. But been very happy, the earthworm activity, you know, the nutrients that we're cycling on the soil test shows that we've got some new, you know, some microbial activity, because you can't cycle the nutrients without it. So
you've seen it on the yield end too, with the crops that you're planting after cover crops, right?
Yeah. And that's what, you know, we're still trying to figure out where the numbers are coming from. But, you know, this year, the beans we had behind cover crop, you know, we were able to see a nice yield bump on those beans. And when we got dry, the cover crops helped us be more resilient. So those beans, as we stressed, you know, in our area here, we didn't get any rain in August. So the farther we went into August, our beans didn't seem to stress behind covers for 7 to 10 days before the other beans around them were. And, you know, an extra 7 to 10 days is 7 to 10 days closer to rain.
What do you think was doing that? What was holding the moisture for those beans, do you think?
Well, I mean, we had those were behind rye covers, and some of them were behind grazed summer covers, and we had mulch on the ground. You know, underneath those bean plants, we had, you know, a good 3 to 4 inches of mulch. And if you went out there on the heat of the day and leaned down under the bean canopy, it was cooler. But then you'd stick your hand underneath down in the sandy ground underneath under that mulch, and it was cool. And, you know, it stayed moist longer because we weren't evaporating. We had a canopy. We were holding it.
Well, and you do mostly no-till, and I'm guessing that's part of the reason as well for moisture.
Yeah, we were saving moisture that way too. You look back on the different mistakes I've made and stuff, and it was a learning experience. But I would say get on YouTube and watch, you know, the Dave Brandt, the Gabe Brown, the Ray Archuleta, all the different. Green Cover Seed is a good one with some videos. You know, I would watch some videos and learn that way. Read some books. Podcasts are great. You know, the No-Till Podcast, the Regenerative Ag Podcast are good ones. And then I guess what I would say is, if there's somebody in your area doing it, go talk to them a little bit and see if they have an idea of what works well in your area. Because a lot of this is dependent on where you're at,
sure,
in your conditions. And the other thing I would say is, you know, try something. It can be scary doing something different like that, but, you know, try it on a part of a field, or, you know, something that, you know, take as much risk as you can stomach, but, you know, I feel it's worth it. It was a struggle for me to get started, but now that we've come to where we're at, I don't plant a cover crop and I'm not as nervous as I used to be.
One of the things I really appreciated about visiting with Austin was the fact that he's continuing to experiment with different ideas around cover crops and evaluating several different farming practices to see how he can get the best return on investment. He's willing to try something new on a few acres to determine what's going to be best on a lot of acres. I know it gave me some ideas on things we could begin to do on our own operation. That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.